A few weeks ago, at our Ash Wednesday service for children and families at the beginning of Lent, Kristen invited the children and the adults to think about what they wanted to cultivate during this Lenten season and what they wanted to let go of. Everyone was asked to write these things down on colored pieces of paper, and the papers have all been folded into different origami shapes and placed on the branches in the narthex, which maybe you have noticed. And also, just as a plug, I think there's still blank papers out there for anyone who hasn't yet had a chance to participate. But maybe you want to try and let go of some worry or anxiety that's not helping a situation you're in. Maybe it's a grudge you've been holding for too long. Maybe it's self-doubt or a bad habit or a bad attitude. Whatever it is, the idea is to let go of the things that weigh you down, that hold you back, that might hinder new things growing, even though we know that this act of letting go isn't simple or straightforward. It can be challenging to release our hold on the things that have been part of our lives, whether they're good or bad. But at the same time, there are things that you want to cultivate. Things like patience or kindness or an open mind, a hobby, a relationship, a spiritual practice. And it's easier for these new things to grow when we've let go of some of these other things. During Lent especially, but really all the time, we're invited to think about these things. We're presented with an entire season to really check in with ourselves, to discern what we need to let go of and of what God's cultivating. We're called to notice how God's at work in our lives and in the world. We're called to discover how we can respond to that, how we can live to further what God's doing. It's an invitation to be alert and open, to perceive these things and to be part of them. In our reading from Isaiah, we find God talking about this very subject. God says, "Do not remember the former things or consider the things of old. I am about to do a new thing. Now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it? I will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert." God's speaking to the people through the prophet Isaiah, telling them all that God is doing. God's offering a word of hope to people who are in desperate need of encouragement, because this part of the book of Isaiah was written to offer comfort to the Israelites who were in exile in Babylon. And in the first verses of the passage, God is revealed as the one who makes a way in the sea, a path in the mighty waters. God's identity is that of liberation, for its God is the one who led the Israelites out of Egypt through the sea in Exodus. Just the memory of that alone should give the people hope. It should remind them what God has done and what God can do. But in Isaiah, God tells the people not to think of these former things. Not because they're not important or impressive, but because God is pointing the people to look forward to the new thing that God's about to do. The thing that will deliver them from their exile, that will be even more glorious than the things of old. God points them to look forward to hope, to a way in the wilderness, to rivers in the desert, to newness springing forth in places we might least expect to find new life, in the places we might not even dare to imagine that new things could be found. The text is pretty clear and descriptive about what God's going to do, but it still includes the question of whether or not the Israelites perceive it. It's the same question that we can ask ourselves today. Do we perceive this new thing? I think that the question is posed in Isaiah and can be asked of us today because God knows God's people. God knows us, knows that we might not perceive what God's doing. We might not believe it to be true or even possible. Perhaps we find ourselves lost in our own wilderness of grieving or of needing clarity or of navigating change. And so it seems really unlikely that anything new is going to happen. Hope isn't easily apparent when we're in these places. We might be considering the positive or negative things of old in our own stories. Or maybe we just find ourselves preoccupied with the day-to-day of trying to balance everything going on in our lives and in the world. And we live in a time where what's wrong and what's bad and what's broken is a lot more obvious than all the good things that are also happening. So no, maybe we don't perceive the new things that God is doing that are springing forth. And again, it's not that these former things aren't important. It's not that they're not worth remembering or considering. But if we only consider the old things, how do we also notice the new ones? The Bible is full of these tensions, and so are our lives. We can experience deep grief and great joy at the same time. We try to hold on to tradition while also attempting to be innovative. We create rules and boundaries, knowing that there's almost always a gray area or an exception. We might be excited about an upcoming life change, but also be really nervous about it. So how do we hold on to all of these things at the same time? How do we acknowledge the old while we also perceive the new, the hope that God points us to? In Isaiah, God tells the people, "Do not remember the former things or consider things of old." But we know that that's easier said than done. It's hard to let go. That's part of the tension. But maybe we can start to let go by holding on to the former a little more gently. And that might let us start to be more perceptive, to grasp all that is new. The passage from John's Gospel shows us what it can look like when we're perceptive. We find that Jesus is eating dinner in Bethany, in Lazarus's home. And this is the Lazarus that Jesus raised from the dead. Martha is serving dinner. Lazarus is at the table, and their sister Mary is at Jesus' feet. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, on his way to the cross. He keeps telling the disciples what's going to happen, but they either miss this crucial point or they just refuse to accept it. So Jesus points them to what's to come, but they do not perceive it. So it's Mary who anoints Jesus, using expensive perfume and wiping his feet with her hair, preparing his body for the day of his burial. In this lavish and kind of intimate act, Mary responds to the fact that Jesus is going to die. And she acts on what nobody else has perceived. But on the other hand, Judas, the one who betrays Jesus, criticizes Mary for using the expensive perfume and not selling it and giving that money to the poor instead. The author points out that Judas didn't actually want to give the money to the poor. He wanted to steal it. But the criticism raises a question and highlights a point of tension. So to be clear, Jesus isn't saying that helping the poor is unimportant or that we shouldn't help the poor. After all, Jesus' entire ministry is about helping those in need, of being in community with those who are kept on the margins of society. So when Jesus says that you will always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me, he's referencing a passage from Deuteronomy in which God instructs the people to give to the poor generously and with an open hand rather than a closed fist, so that God's vision of there being no one in need will become reality one day. And he's also telling the disciples, again, that he's going to die. So in this particular moment, as Jesus is preparing for his death, he acknowledges that Mary perceived what none of the other disciples noticed and responded appropriately and generously. She perceived the part of Jesus' story, the part about his death, the part that was unimaginable, the part that would usher in new life and a new hope, and she acted. I don't even know how much I don't perceive. Because that's the whole point, right? We have no idea. Just the other day, I realized that there are flowers blooming on the trees and in the soil, that spring is well and truly here. But if my allergies of the past few weeks had been any indication, I might have noticed and been able to appreciate all of this beauty much sooner. And that's to say nothing of the times where I'm too preoccupied to perceive that a friend could really use someone to talk to. Or I'm so caught up in a project or task that I miss good suggestions or offers of help. Or I'm so weighed down by all the bad news that I don't realize that there's good news out there too. There are times when we hold on to the former things with such a tight grip, where we only remember the things of old, that we don't perceive the new thing that God is doing, the hope and promise of new life all around us. We can become so consumed by the things of old that it's hard for us to notice the things of hope that God points us to. But God tells us that a new thing is springing forth. So to follow Christ then through the Lenten wilderness on the journey to Jerusalem is to respond to an invitation to perceive that newness springing forth all around us. It's a call to notice what we might otherwise overlook. It's an opportunity to hope in that which isn't always obvious to hope in. It's the king who didn't fit expectations, the death the disciples didn't see coming, the resurrection and new life that often seems impossible in a world that can be harsh and is full of suffering. But God points us to hope. God shows us what's new and calls us to be part of it, to join in that work and mission, to not just notice it, but believe in it and hope in it and respond to it. So what are the new things springing forth in your life, springing forth in this place? Where do you find hope? And what might you need to let go of so that you can better grasp that newness, so that you can be part of it? Maybe it's a matter of letting go of something else or just releasing your hold a little bit so that we can better perceive it. Maybe we need to slow down. Maybe we need to be more open, more mindful, more prayerful about what's all around us and how we might generously respond. So as we continue this journey through Lent to Easter and to the days that follow, may we strive to have this perception. Amen.